This episode is brought to you by Dietz and Watson.
Molly, it's time we have the talk about hot dogs.
Okay. Well, hey, I'm looking for a hot dog that's the real deal, Matthew.
Like a classic hot dog that, like, when you think of, like, the platonic ideal of a hot dog, I recommend Dietz and Watson's Dietz dogs.
Ah, well, I've heard that they're handcrafted and made using only Dietz and Watson premium meat.
I can vouch for this because Dietz and Watson sent us a big box of hot dogs and other delights, and wife of the show, Lori, and I had them for dinner last night. We had the classic beef Dietz dogs with toasted buns with sauerkraut and pickled jalapenos and Dietz and Watson ballpark-style yellow mustard.
Do you think you'd recommend Dietz and Watson hot dogs for fried rice?
Oh, yeah. Fried rice with some sliced hot dogs. I'm going to be doing that soon. Wife of the show, Lori, is going to be making the hot dog flour buns from Christina Cho's cookbook, Mooncakes and Milk Bread. Very excited for this.
And I'm especially pleased because Dietz and Watson does things the right way. So this means, like, no additives, no fillers, no artificial flavors, no cutting corners. You can feel good about this stuff.
Dietz and Watson. It's a family thing since 1939.
Shop now at dietzandwatson.com/the right way.
That's Dietz, D-I-E-T-Z, and watson.com/the right way.
I'm Molly.
And I'm Matthew.
And this is Spilled Milk, the show where we cook something delicious, eat it all, and you can't have any. I'm trying out a different tone today.
Oh, wow. This is very exciting.
I haven't figured out what the tone is yet.
Yeah, I was desperately trying to figure out what the bit was. And this episode is about yeast.
I kind of can't believe it's taken us this long. I mean, like, we already did a sourdough episode.
Well,
but
I mean,
this is sourdough.
Sourdough predated yeast by centuries.
Well, actually, sourdough has yeast in it.
Okay, sourdough predated commercial, like,
there you go.
Buy it off the shelf yeast.
Yes,
this was suggested by listener Aaron, who I think actually listener Aaron's suggestion was leavening, which I mean, we try and, like, bring a little leavening to the atmosphere every week. Oh, boy.
Okay. I shouldn't say that.
That was my new character that I'm trying out.
Okay. All right. Anyway, so, yeah, we're going to talk about commercial yeast. So, for me, that means, you know, active dry, rapid rise. It also means, like, fresh, like, cake yeast.
Yes, we're going to talk about all of those things. Yeah.
Okay. So,
don't worry. We're not going to neglect fresh cake yeast. So
we go down memory
lane. And I think we're mostly going to talk about, like, in baked goods. We'll talk about, like, the origins of commercial yeast in the beer industry. But
okay, great.
Yeah, let's go down memory lane. I used to work in a yeast lab.
You did?
Yes, that's my memory lane. So after college, I got a job in the medical school.
Hold on, is this after? So I know that you dropped out of college, but then you went back to college.
Thanks for telling everyone, Molly.
Oh, sorry. No, I think this is one of the more interesting things about you, because you're so nerdy, but not in this, like, you know, linear education way.
No, more in, like, a devil may care kind of leather jacket kind of.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you wear a leather jacket all the time. You're constantly, like, revving your motorcycle as you know.
That's true.
Speed off down the street.
The other day, I went to look at clarinets with Teenager of the Show. Just because, like, why wouldn't I? Because, like, that's the kind of devil may care, like, Mr. Cool, Mr. Clarinet. I went to look at clarinets with Teenager of the Show, Iris, who's in the market for a new clarinet. If anyone has a clarinet in their closet that's, like, burning a hole in their closet, let me know. We might take it off your hands. So, wife of the show, Lori, found there's this guy in Belltown who is like a clarinet and saxophone repair person, and has, like, had an office in Belltown for, like, a shop in Belltown for years and years.
Great.
And so we went down to check this out and see what clarinets he had for sale. And his shop is, like, in the back room of a bar. It's exactly what you would want it to be. It's, like, a small room full of machines and old clarinets and saxophones, some working, some not. And, like, in a corner of the shop, for no reason, was a motorcycle.
Yes.
And, like, this was a tiny room. Like, it was not bigger than my kitchen and dining room.
He's a real clarinet man.
Real clarinet man. So this guy is way cooler than me. He's got a motorcycle that cannot be driven because it's inside a shop, inside a bar.
Okay, anyway, but hold on. So you dropped out of college.
Right. I dropped out of college.
And then you moved to Seattle, and then you finished your degree at the UW?
Yes.
Okay.
So it's a very heartwarming Horatio Alger story. And after I finished at the UW, I got a job at the UW at the medical school as a research assistant in a yeast lab. I mean, not to brag, but UW, my alma mater, is one of the most important yeast research institutions in the world, along with the Carlsberg Lab in Denmark and some others.
Oh, that's cool.
Uh-huh.
That's cool.
So the reason...
Can I tell you something about my experience in a lab? So I worked in a corn genome
lab working on the corn genome
at Stanford the summer after my freshman year. And it was a formative time for me. That was the summer I lost my virginity to a grad student in a different lab.
Oh.
And I first met him at a inter-lab barbecue at the cornfield.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I wasn't sold on this story until you mentioned the cornfield.
Anyway, but I thought that I was so lucky to have gotten this job because the woman who was the head of the lab, the scientist who was the head of the lab, was like a celebrity to me because there was a little sidebar about her in my AP bio textbook in high school. And so then getting to work for her, I seriously thought this woman was, I had like Bieber fever for this woman. I thought she was so cool.
What was her name?
Her name was Virginia Walbutt.
Okay.
She's still out there, I believe.
Still out there somewhere in deep in the cornfield.
Anyway, I think that obviously she's a very accomplished scientist. But to me, my thought of her was way out of proportion. She was a celebrity to me because she was in my high school textbook.
One time I worked for a UW prof, a biology professor who wrote the biology textbook that we used for the course. I was very impressed by this.
Yeah. Those were formative years for
me. Yeah, very formative.
What can I say?
So I got a job in this yeast lab. And the reason they study yeast is it's easy to grow. It grows fast. You can look at its genes and mess around with them.
However, easy to do genetic work on it because you can splice things into its genome.
Totally.
Right? It's a really good vector.
Right.
Is that right?
And like humans, it's a eukaryotic organism. So there's more similarity between the yeast genome and also yeast physiology is, I don't know if that's the right word, cellular biology and human cellular biology than between humans and bacteria.
Okay.
However, as the new guy at the lab, I didn't get to work with the yeast very much. I was mostly working with E. coli. So
okay.
When you work with yeast and you have yeast growing in the incubator, it smells like bread or kind of mm-hmm. beer, somewhere between beer and bread. When you're working with the E. coli, it smells like poop.
Really?
Yes.
Is that what makes poop smell like poop?
Yes.
I mean, I know we all have E. coli in our intestines.
Tons of it.
I didn't realize that was part of what creates the poop smell.
Oh, yes, absolutely. And we weren't working with pathogenic E. coli, the bad ones that you hear about. This was totally non-toxic, safe E. coli, but it still smelled terrible. I did not enjoy that job very much. I think I quit after 4 months.
Did the smell linger on you? When I worked at Whole Foods and worked with cheese, I could not get the smell of cheese off my hands.
Yeah, I'm not sure.
I mean, maybe I also wasn't very good at hand washing or something.
Great. Why did you get fired for the cheese counter?
No, but seriously, oh my God. I remember the day that I had to, you know how mass produced cheeses often come in a big loaf, right?
Yes.
And then they are cut into smaller bricks and individually wrapped and sold in a refrigerated case. Well, I had to break down a whole loaf of smoked mozzarella.
Uh-huh.
So, I can't remember. We cut it into maybe 16 pieces and then you're
it's important to remember exactly how many pieces you cut it into.
Anyway, and the thing is I was wearing gloves, right? Because you can't handle ready-to-eat food without gloves. But even with the gloves, my hands smelled like I had been smoking meat all day.
Wow.
It was crazy. It was gross.
Sometimes do you wake from a dream and feel the smell is still lingering?
No.
Okay. I had a weird dream the other day. I don't remember anything about it. Okay. Okay. Cool. Okay, so speaking of big loaves, yeast is a unicellular fungus. Saccharomyces cerevisiae.
What do you mean by eukaryote? I forgot what that means.
Okay, I would love to explain this in excruciating detail.
Okay.
So a bacterium is just kind of like a sack with like all its genetic material, just kind of like, you know how we're the human sack? Well, it's just like a little bag of fluid with its genetic material, like just one long chromosome just kind of slurking around in there.
Is that a prokaryote?
That is a prokaryote, yes.
Okay.
And a eukaryote, which like eukaryote means like true nucleus, it is a cell that has much more structure than a prokaryote in that it has a nucleus where the genetic material is kept and then like all kinds of other parts.
Okay.
I mean, some of those parts prokaryotes also have, but prokaryotes do not have a nucleus and are generally much smaller cells.
Interesting. Okay, this makes sense. All right. And so yeast is a unicellular fungus.
Yes. And okay. It's the Latin name is Saccharomyces cerevisiae, and that is definitely cerevisiae as in cerveza, because it is the same yeast that is used to make ale. And historically, like when people were starting to use non-sourdough yeast.
Wait a minute. Which came first, cerevisiae or cerveza?
Is
this a dumb question?
No, it's not a dumb question. I think cerveza came first because these Latin names were given by Linnaeus in like the 17th century,
okay.
Mostly.
And so they weren't all given by Linnaeus, but I'm sure this one was much earlier than that.
Absolutely.
Okay.
So
fermented grain beverages.
Right. So I think literally the word cerevisia probably came first because it's Latin, but like this use of it.
I wonder if we'll have any sort of like taxonomist let us know.
I hope so, because that's something I'm really into.
So, I couldn't tell if you were being serious or not.
I think you're being serious. I am being serious. Like, okay. that was my like pretty much my favorite thing.
God, you are a real cerevisiae man.
Yeah.
That's better than a clarinet man.
Well, no, I like my woodwinds, my leather jacket.
Your cerveza.
My cerveza, yeah. Sounds pretty good, actually. So, like, in the early days of commercial yeast baking, you know, bakers would get, like, this cast-off, unneeded yeast from brewers. And then what happened was the brewers were like, hey, you know what? We could make beer in a different style that is, easier to make in quantity. Rather than make ale, we can make lager, which uses a different type of yeast that is less useful for bread baking.
Mm.
And so the bread bakers had a problem.
Oh.
I'm trying to give this somehow inject some drama into this story.
I see the narrative unfolding.
But last week we had that whole story about the downfall of Fanny Craddock, and like nothing I say, no story I tell the rest of my life is ever going to live up to
that.
You
know what? When we talk about the downfall of Fanny Craddock,
yes.
It brings to mind our old visitor, Mrs.
Cubison. Yes. When we watched the Fanny Craddock video, like I could see like she could have been
Mrs. Cubison was like her like sweet like half sister.
I think it could be like a Jekyll and Hyde situation.
Oh, Mrs. Craddock and Mrs. Cubison.
Because like Mrs. Cubison is like the sweet gentle one, but like, you know, don't provoke her or
she'll haunt you.
Right. Fanny Craddock will come out and like tell you that your pudding is no good. Okay, so the bread bakers, they got a problem. Like their yeast source is drying up, and this is particularly happening in Germany, where there was that's where the beer industry was undergoing this transformation, and so they developed. And boy, is this going to be anticlimactic! What is called the Vienna process?
Okay, which, I'm ready.
By Robert Ludlum.
Is this a treaty?
It's not a treaty.
Okay.
It's just a way of like basically making beer like up to a certain point and then stopping, so you just produce a bunch of yeast and then.
Is this still how it's done?
No, it's not.
Okay.
So this was like an early process for mass producing yeast, but now the way it's done is in like big tanks where the yeast is like, they've got a right temperature, they've got a nutritious broth, and the yeast is dividing in this tank, and then they centrifuge the shit out of it.
I got to use a centrifuge in the lab.
I also got to use a centrifuge in the lab. When I was reading about this, I was like, it's been so long since I've centrifuged, I want a centrifuge, and started browsing centrifuges on Amazon for no reason.
Are there like inexpensive centrifuges for like, I mean, well, God, I feel like a lot of the stuff in that, the modernist cuisine cookbooks, like,
yeah, that's like all centrifuges.
Like centrifuged,
probably.
Like pea pee puree and stuff.
Yeah, he centrifuged pee.
I bet that would be really cool to see, like, the minerals, like, what do you call it when they come out of solution?
Precipitate?
Yes, precipitate.
Yes. Yeah, I would love to see pee precipitate. So anyway, so back to Germany.
Okay.
In the 1840s-ish.
Yeah.
So the first bread product that was widely available made with commercial yeast rather than sourdough apparently was the Kaiser roll in Vienna in around the 1840s. So like that's not when Kaiser rolls originated, but it's when Kaiser rolls started being made with commercial yeast. And like to the average consumer, it was a revelation because it was so much like sweeter and less, you know, it didn't taste like sourdough. And like, so it was like the first glimmer of like, you know, modern, like Wonder Bread style baked goods, and people couldn't get enough of it.
Little did they know we would be saturated with it later.
That's
and
right.
We would get all excited about sourdough.
Yeah. So then I was like, why were people buying all these Kaiser rolls? Were they for sandwiches or were like, I had kind of like a little philosophical crisis about like, what is a roll? Are rolls eaten as like a staple food? Because like I think of rolls as something that you always eat like as a side dish or to make a sandwich with. But it seemed like people were eating a lot of these Kaiser rolls and maybe just like as a staple. I don't know. I couldn't figure out the answer. So chew on that. You were asking like, could we get a centrifuge?
Yeah.
So what I found was like, it seems like you can get like a shitty centrifuge for like $60, but if you want like a pretty good one, that's going to be like $250 or $300.
Okay. Well, okay. Let's see how the show does
okay. Over
the next few months.
All right.
Yeah, we'll see.
Yeah. And let's start making a list of recipes that would be best made in a centrifuge.
Okay.
And like, to be clear,
do you
like
think,
the kind of tabletop centrifuge that I'm talking about, you have to like put the stuff in like tiny little vials.
Yeah, no, I know. We're going to need
right.
a pipette.
Yep. Oh, right. We need, oh, wow. If I never see a pipette again.
Did you ever get Pipetman's thumb?
No, but I think we've talked about it on the show before.
I love talking about Pipetman's thumb.
I think I quit before it could get me.
Yeah. Okay. So hold on. Let's talk about, you know, how to buy yeast, what commercial yeast is and the different types of it.
Yeah. So there's pretty much three different kinds you'll find with some slight variations.
Okay.
So there is fresh cake yeast, which you mentioned. This is the kind that is most widely used in commercial like big bread bakeries.
Oh, like, you know, like Franz Bakery here in Seattle?
Well,
no,
so,
that seems
no,
very...
I was thinking more like artisanal bakeries.
Oh.
I don't know what they use at like an industrial bread bakery.
Well, for instance, are you familiar with the book Classic German Baking by Louisa Weiss?
Yes.
So, you know, in that, I mean, she covers this wide range of German baking, and there's a lot of yeast baking in Germany, right? I remember Louisa, even before she wrote that book, always like singing the praises of cake yeast.
Right. So
I think from her, you know, her connection to Berlin and German baking. But whenever I've tried using cake yeast, it doesn't work for me.
Right. So here's the problem with cake yeast. It is highly perishable.
So but it can't be. I mean, there are other things that are highly perishable and we eat them and use them all the time. Meat.
Yeah. But the thing with meat is like it's already dead.
Okay.
Whereas yeast only works if it's alive.
Oh, right.
So like you can if your meat is a couple days past date, like you can like
right. It's not losing its ability to nourish you.
Exactly.
Whereas I guess when yeast dies, it loses its ability to do its job.
Right. So fresh cake yeast, like you got like a 2-week window, pretty much.
Well, but I bought it the day before making some sort of like yeasted pastry. And it still didn't rise properly.
Right. So I think, I don't know why like commercial artisan bakers are so into cake yeast. I think partly it's like a tradition thing. It like seems like a more natural product.
I think we're going to have a lot of listeners who are going to tell us about this and have big
maybe,
opinions. And they're going to think we are dumb. And they're not wrong.
Except like... I would be so skeptical that you could possibly tell the difference in the end product. Like, I understand the importance of the journey and, like, you know, wanting to use, like, ingredients that, you know, it smells
Matthew,
better.
It is all about the journey.
It's all about
it's
the journey.
It's not about like, the end point.
Like, I bake bread every day.
So who cares whether it tastes the same or not?
The end result is inedible and I throw it into a fire.
but it's part of your process.
Yeah, but it's very meditative. So what you will find for home use in the average supermarket is two kinds of dry yeast. And there's active dry yeast, which is like the most, that's the older kind.
Many, in terms of when it was developed.
In terms of when it was developed. And many recipes still call for it. The other kind is instant yeast, which is sometimes called rapid rise or bread machine yeast. And that kind, in my opinion, like does everything active dry can do, but also is better because you don't have to proof it.
Okay.
And proofing it is when you put the yeast in water to make sure it bubbles and is still alive and starts to dissolve. The instant yeast, it's just like basically finer granules.
Okay. Yes.
And like more and more recipes are written with instant yeast in mind. So you can mix it with the dry ingredients.
Okay.
And it's more convenient and the, you know, works just as well or better.
So, you know, I find the tricky thing about this is that there are still a lot of recipes out there that do call for active dry.
Yeah.
So do you wind up keeping both around?
Nope. Just substitute instant yeast for active dry in any recipe. It'll work fine.
Like same technically, quantity.
Technically you should reduce the quantity by like a quarter or a third or something, but it doesn't really matter.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. All right.
I know. I'm like really like stepping out there. Like, you know, I'm putting my reputation on the line on this episode.
Yeah. Yeah. You really are, man.
Right. Because people like get in touch with me all the time. Like, you know, how dare you say the things you say about active dry yeast? And like, you can't silence me.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Also, like I found that like it's very easy to find people who claim that the best bread is always made with sourdough rather than commercial yeast, to which I say, please.
Please.
Yeah.
You know, it's interesting. I do think most of the bread, like the crusty breads that I buy and that I really enjoy are made with sourdough or natural leavening.
All right, that's it. You're off this episode.
But
no, I think I like them both.
But what I wanted to say is that, you know, I think about pizza and things like that. Like when I've only had, I think, sourdough pizza once, and it was very nice. But like, I think of pizza crust as like the like a commercial yeast.
Absolutely.
And we all love that, and we can agree that that pizza crust can be extremely flavorful.
Yeah, but also you can make really great, like rustic artisan breads with purely commercial yeast.
Okay. Do you realize what you're saying here? You are trashing, by implication, our friend Sylvia.
No. It's like...
I did say to Ash the other day, I was like, I'm getting tired of keeping Sylvia alive, and I think soon I may have to let her die.
I mean, you could dry her.
So far, I've just been keeping her in the fridge and feeding her like every 3 weeks or a month, and she's been fine.
Yeah. No, I mean, it doesn't have to be one or the other, is what I'm saying. Like sourdough bread and commercial yeast bread aren't the same, and like one isn't like a, you don't have to take sides here. Like,
okay.
There can be Sylvia and like, what would you name a commercial yeast? I think like
Fleischmann,
exactly. Like okay. Sylvia and in fact, Sylvia and Fleischmann can work together in
they
the
can.
Same loaf.
They
like,
can.
Okay, this I'm so glad you brought this up because like among the best breads that I've made at home were from Ken Forkish's book, Flour, Water, Salt, Yeast, which has a bunch of recipes in it for hybrid loaves that use sourdough and commercial yeast.
That makes a lot of sense to me.
So you're getting the flavor of sourdough with like a little bit of kick to the rise from commercial yeast.
That is really smart. Ken Forkish, what a guy. That
yes.
book is great.
This episode is brought to you by Masterclass.
Matthew, this weekend I took a class from somebody who I bet you admire as much as I do.
Okay, let me see it. Let me see if I can guess who that is. Denzel Washington.
No, so close though.
Okay.
Margaret Atwood.
Okay, yeah, very
yes,
similar.
Yes. So Margaret Atwood, she has a series of 23 classes on Masterclass.
23 classes.
23 classes. And I only had time, honestly, to watch two of them. But one of the ones that I watched was about how she chose to do to write The Handmaid's Tale in first person, where she wrote Alias Grace from multiple points of view.
Wow.
And so it was so interesting to listen to her talk about like the feeling that she wanted the book to have and why a story should be told from this perspective or that one. Anyway, even though I'm a writer and I teach writing, I think this stuff would be fascinating even to people who just read the book. It was so great.
Yeah, I mean, Masterclass is for you if you're like me, a bit of a prima donna, and you're like, I want to learn something, but I only want to learn from the best. Mm-hmm. You go to Masterclass. You can learn to think like a boss with Martha Stewart. You can learn to shoot three-pointers with Steph Curry. Like, if you imagine the person who's best at the thing you want to learn, they are probably already on Masterclass teaching how to do it.
That is accurate. And plus, every new membership comes with a 30-day money-back guarantee. So, like, zero risk here. If you are a lifelong learner, and we certainly hope you are,
if you're a lifelong learner, why are you listening to this show? Instead, head over to Masterclass for an additional 15% off an annual membership at masterclass.com/spilledmilk15.
Get 15% off right now at masterclass.com/spilledmilk15.
That's masterclass.com/spilledmilk15.
Save big money in your next project with help from Menards. Move water where you need it quickly with a Barracuda sump pump. Sump pumps keep your basement dry when big storms hit unexpectedly. Get a half horsepower cast iron Barracuda sump pump on sale now through May 5th. Hurry into Menards. And don't forget to check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now.
Save big money at Menards.
I recommend if you're gonna do some yeast baking, buy the little jar rather than the packets.
Yeah.
Because it is way, way cheaper. And like if you use it more than about six times in a year, you're gonna come out ahead, even though the jar is like $7 and feels expensive.
Yeah. No, totally. That makes sense. The other thing I would say is that people feel that yeast baking is scary.
Yeah.
Right? Here is my feeling about yeast baking. The times that it has failed me are pretty much only when I'm using sourdough. Or when I'm using cake yeast.
Yeah.
I have never had a problem with, active dry or instant yeast.
Yes. Do not try and use it after the freshness date because, like, that's a pretty serious freshness date, unlike some.
Okay.
We were talking earlier about how Molly and I both will leave buttermilk in the fridge literally forever.
Yes.
Yeah. But yeast, it will die eventually. Okay. So... yeah, yeast is not scary. If you use instant yeast, you don't have to proof it, which feels like a big imposition sometimes.
And you keep yours in the freezer.
I keep mine in the freezer. It lasts about a year.
Oh, okay. All right.
So what are some things that you like to make with yeast?
Oh, man. Okay. Marion Cunningham's Yeasted Waffles, originally published in The Breakfast Book, now available all over the interweb. We'll link to the recipe.
Yeah, for sure.
You start it overnight, super easy. And the next morning you add, I think, like melted butter and an egg or something.
Exactly.
And it's really easy.
So great.
The only thing that I don't love about that recipe, and maybe this is just my waffle iron, I have a Belgian waffle style, and while the outer edges get really wonderfully crisp with that like yeasted batter, it tends to make the whole waffle crisp all the way through. It doesn't stay tender in the middle. Whereas like a baking soda or baking powder leavened waffle tends to stay chewy inside.
But you know what you do? Then you put tons of syrup on it and it gets...
Soft
again. Yeah, exactly. Immediately.
I think I don't love having a Belgian-style plates in my waffle iron.
It was if only there was some alternative.
Does your waffle iron have interchangeable plates? No, my childhood one did.
Yeah.
My childhood one had like either, regular waffle irons on one side or like... griddle on the other side. So my dad would make grilled cheese sandwiches in there, like almost like panini press style.
Could you like have one waffle and one griddle and like have a grilled cheese sandwich that's like a waffle on one side and a sandwich on the other side?
Never tried that. But anyway, no, mine is only Belgian waffle style and I don't like it.
We need to get this centrifuge and then once
we're going to precipitate some urine.
We're going to...
And that's going to get us closer to my having an American style waffle iron.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well then we'll sell the uric acid to some like health nuts or something who think that's good for you.
Okay.
Okay.
All right.
Okay, so say you have tried making bread at home with commercial yeast and have had mediocre results. I have some ideas.
Okay, talk to me about mediocre results. Do you mean here are some things I can think of, Matthew.
Yeah, go, you.
Number one, sort of lackluster depth of flavor.
Yep.
Number two, not very good crust development.
Yep.
That's my two.
Okay, so I have ideas for both of those things.
Great.
So I think, first of all, I'm talking about lean breads. And mean bread.
So we're not talking about brioche, challah.
Right. For brioche, challah, like so much of the flavor and texture is coming from like the butter or eggs or other fat that you're putting in there that you don't need to take these steps that I'm about to outline. But for making like, you know, a crusty loaf.
Okay.
There are a few things I think you should always do when you're using commercial yeast. Okay. One is to use less yeast and more time.
Okay.
Because you just get more flavor development that way.
This is a lesson I learned from working alongside Brandon as we developed the pizza dough for Delancey. It uses a tiny amount of yeast, but it ferments for like 24 hours.
Yeah. Second thing is to use a pre-ferment, such as a poulish or poulish. I'm not sure how you say it.
What? How's that different from a starter?
It is a type of starter.
Okay.
So it's not a sourdough starter, but it is a type of starter in the sense that you make, you sort of make a runny dough and you leave it and then you mix all of that into your actual dough. And it's just a way of like further developing flavors and making sure that...
That sounds like too much work to me, Matthew.
It's not that. I knew you were going to say that.
I don't want to do that. I'm just going to keep buying my bread, I guess, or, at like $7 a loaf.
You could come over here and I'll make you some.
Well, but so if you're working with, well, so I guess what you're doing then is you're using a recipe that calls for a poulish or a poulish.
Yes. Or a biga.
Okay.
I think there's one other one with a fun name. but it's not a big deal because it takes like 2 minutes to mix this thing up. And then, like, the next day, you build the full dough.
That makes sense.
None of these things are things you're going to do. If you're not into baking bread, don't bake bread.
Yeah.
Like,
my problem is I'm into baking bread very inconsistently, and that's not sustainable.
You know what actually is a good book is the Artisan Bread in 5 minutes a Day.
Yeah.
Like, that's what you should do.
No, that book is legit.
And it uses less yeast and more time, and that's a big part of how it works.
Okay.
Yeah.
Going through a bread baking phase is like a part of the human lifespan,
is, right?
Like it's like a developmental stage.
Yeah, like some and like any time it hits you, it's okay. Like you may like be like putting loaves in and out of the oven at age 2, or it might take you till you're 80.
I've gone through it twice, in fact.
Yeah, I have too.
Yeah,
like, I had a commercial yeast phase and a sourdough phase.
I had a sourdough phase and then a sourdough phase.
Mm-hmm.
And so far, both of them have ended pretty quickly.
Cool.
Okay. All right.
Yeah, I mean, because I don't know. I was going to say it's about bread.
It's a lot of work. I think I told you that I recently did. So the New York Times, sometime in the last year, published a guide, like, sort of a comprehensive guide to making sourdough bread.
Oh, I thought you were going to say the New York Times published a thing about the best podcasts of the year.
Oh, they did.
Yeah,
and
just saying.
And they included us, which is so weird.
Just saying.
Anyway, but what I was going to say is that I followed this recipe. It's beautifully, you know, fleshed out with pictures. It's broken down into steps. It was so labor intensive.
So wait, oh, this was a recipe from the New York Times.
Yeah, it was really good. It was so labor intensive. Multiple times I was like, never again. And even though it was really good, I will never, ever make it again. It was ridiculous. It had you like fold and turn the dough every 1 hour for like 8 hours.
Oh, that's
and on
okay,
and
that's
on
too
and on.
Many folds and turns. That's more than necessary. But I love that process of like when you like lift the edge of the dough and slap it over the top.
I was just like, I know in theory it sounds fine. Like I work from home. I could just get up every hour and go do this. But I found it infuriating.
Yeah, no, I hear what you say. I guess the point of this yeast episode is don't bother.
Okay.
Just like, I mean, like, you, there's bread out there. Like,
but it's so expensive.
I know.
And once you've baked bread, it's like writing. When you're in the middle of it,
that's
you're
right.
Like, never again.
Yep.
And then when you're done with it, you're like, God, I can't wait to do that again. Oh, I was born for that.
Oh, and then the other thing that I forgot to mention is, like, bake your loaf in a Dutch oven.
Yes, with the lid on.
With the lid on.
Yeah.
That's how you get the good crust formation.
Because of the steam that's created.
Because of that steamy steam room.
Steam is great. Okay, so what do you recommend for those of us who maybe get a little frustrated with, like, trying to make a rustic bread?
Right, that's the thing. Everyone wants to make, like, a rustic loaf that's, like, as good as you get at your favorite bakery. And maybe you can do that. But like Molly said, it's going to take a pound of flesh to make that pound of loaf. So other yeasted things that are a lot less challenging that we like to make are like dinner rolls. Remember when we made Parker House rolls? That was so easy and we were shocked at how good they were.
Oh, God. I'd almost forgotten about that. They were really good.
Yeah. Not hard to make at all.
Can we post the recipe for that again?
I think so. I don't remember what episode it was on.
Did we do an episode on rolls?
And yet I still don't know what rolls are.
Yeah.
I'm like, okay.
Okay, cinnamon rolls. Now, this is something that I've made with yeast many times. Foolproof, easy, what's not to love?
Yeah, and like there are non-yeasted cinnamon roll recipes, but not only are the yeasted ones tastier, but they're easier because you do the whole thing the night before and then you just bake them in the morning.
Totally, yeah.
And you slather on just gallons of cream cheese frosting.
Flatbreads.
There's this kind of simplified non-recipe from like NAAN, like Indian flatbread recipe from Cooks Illustrated. I don't know if it's online, but it is in a number of their books, like Baking Illustrated and others, that is a very simple, quick, like, you know, the whole thing comes together in a couple hours, yeasted flatbread dough that you then cook in a skillet. It's great.
Okay, that sounds great.
And like pizza dough is so easy to make.
Yes.
There are many great pizza dough recipes on Serious Eats, most if not all of them from our friend Kenji Lopez Alt. Mm-hmm. There's pan pizza dough that I make all the time. There's like New York style pizza dough. There's Detroit pizza. Yeah. Like use instant yeast. You're not going to have a problem.
Wow. Okay. Well, this has been a both empowering and demoralizing episode.
Like, I think that's usually like kind of the balance that we find by the end of the episode.
I mean, that's kind of what our friendship is like.
Empowering and demoralizing?
I don't know how you experience it, but I experience it as mostly empowering.
Me too.
Okay, good. The other day, I was looking up something about Enneagrams,
and I remembered
that you're an Enneagram 1.
Yeah.
An Enneagram 1, and it's been helpful for me to know that about you, because sometimes, like, you're so helpful. Sometimes
it's super annoying, right?
No, it's incredible.
Sometimes it is.
And sometimes I feel like I am getting too much from Matthew and not giving anything in return. And I think I actually am. But also it's helpful for me to know that this is part of where you get your self-worth.
It's where I get my kicks.
On Route 66.
Yes.
Let's break into song.
The thing is, the bill's going to come due for all of the things that I've done for you.
What kinds of things can I do for you?
That's true. What skills do you bring to the table? I guess what I'm going to want is, like, you know, we've just talked about this, like every author, like my ultimate fantasy, sex is good and all, but my ultimate fantasy is to have like a great book out there with my name on it that's on the bestseller list and I didn't have to write it. So it's got your name.
I'm going to have to ghostwrite for
you. You're going to ghostwrite the shit out of a book for me and it's going to be great.
Oh, God, that does sound really good.
Yeah, right?
Yeah. Do I get part of the advance?
Okay. Yeah. I don't care about the money. I just want the satisfaction and
I care about the money.
The fans. Okay.
Okay. I mean, I need the money.
Is this book going to be like just another memoir of like all things about your life, but we're going to have to change your name to my name? Because I don't know if that's going to be believable.
We'll keep working on this.
Speaking of another memoir with things about Molly's life.
Oh, God.
No reason.
No. Oh, yeah. So this episode is airing on April 2nd, and my book is coming out on May 12th.
Yes. And sometimes it starts, like when a book comes out, it like arrives a little early. Could that happen?
I have no
Probably
idea.
Not that
it depends
early.
On where you pre-ordered your book. And this is another good time for us to talk about, like, this is something that is baffling about the publishing industry if you're not in it, which is that, so you know how books wind up on the bestseller list?
Most, I mean, not personally, but yes.
Most of the time books wind up on the bestseller list these days because of pre-orders. Mm-hmm. It can also happen if, like, Oprah likes your book or something, obviously.
Does Oprah like your... I really hope Oprah likes your book.
I don't think
book.
Oprah cares about my book. But here's the deal. Like... pre-orders are really important, and it's so dumb, but they're really important.
Yeah, we tell a lot of jokes and outright lies on this show, but that's true. And so please pre-order Molly's book, The Fixed Stars. It's a wonderful book.
Thanks. Oh, God, this got too earnest. Let's move on. So you can find us at facebook.com/spilledmilkpodcast.
Yeah, what do you like to yeast?
Yeah, what do you like to yeast? And I don't know, like what
does yeet mean? That's a thing that kids are saying.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, I thought that was Yeezy.
No. That's a thing that like 38-year-olds are into.
Oh. All right. Tell us about what kind of yeasted baked goods are you making these days? Anything that we should know about that won't be totally demoralizing?
Yeah. I think if you ask a kid, like, what do you think of Kanye? They'll be like, oh, like you, that old man that my
dad
listens
to.
That crazy old man that my parents are into. Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm also curious. You know what is something that I have not thought about in ages? Bread machines.
I was thinking about
like,
that too.
You mentioned bread machine yeast.
Yes,
as a synonym for quick rise or rapid rise.
If it actually is sold under that name anymore, but yeah,
I'm curious to see if any of our listeners. I think if you know, a lot of our listeners are about our age, so it means that bread machines probably came out when we were all like teenagers, right?
Oh,
pre-teens.
Yeah. Like, and going to those, like, bread machine sleepovers.
Totally. Yeah, where you all cram in the bread machine. It's so warm and cozy.
7 minutes in heaven in the bread machine? And you come out with a golden brown crust?
Anyway. God. You know, I could never do it because my skin's too fair. I
right,
got burned.
Sure. Uh-huh. Anyway, in the bread machine.
Anyway, but does anybody still use those things?
I think probably some people do.
Yeah. I mean, it makes so much sense, right?
Like it does. So I think the thing with bread machines, I think we've talked about this before, is like they're good at every part of the process except the actual baking part is not ideal. And I remember, I know I've mentioned this before, but like when King Arthur Flour first started selling bread machines in their catalog, and this is absolutely true, they suggested that you buy the bread machine, use it for like the kneading and rising of the dough, and then take it out of the bread machine and bake it in the oven.
I think I would actually do that.
Yeah, it seems pretty good, right?
Because that would get rid of all the parts that I don't like.
Yes.
Okay. All right. What else do we want people to do? So, you know, we recently went on our annual corporate retreat.
Yeah, I hope it went well.
And we actually haven't gone on it yet when we're taping this episode. Anyway, but you can find pictures of it for sure on Instagram.
Yes, because producer Abby's coming along and will force us to Instagram.
Yeah. What else do we want people to do?
That's at Spilled Milk Podcast on Instagram.
Yeah.
Okay. I don't think we really have the power to make people do anything. Like, we already asked them to pre-order your book, and like, I think that's enough.
I think that's more than
you're already
enough.
Listening to the show, and we can't really ask more than that, except for pre-ordering Molly's book and also pre-ordering the book that Molly's going to write and put my name on.
Yeah. Our producer is Abby Circatella.
And until next time, thank you for listening to Spilled Milk. Stay active, stay dry, or...
What about either of those is fine.
Yeah.
I'm Molly Weisenberg.
And I'm Matthew Hepster Burton.
Maybe I'll do it anyway.
Yeah. I mean, it's your mom. She'll still love you.
That's true.
Probably.
Save big money and start your spring project with help from Menards. We offer a huge selection of body plants, veggies, and herbs to plant at home and grow yourself. Right now, all 4.5-inch Bonnie plants are on sale through May 5th. Head to the Menards Garden Center to get your garden growing and check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now.
Save big money and-